So welcome back to the 2S Horror Quarters podcast. Back to the original format. I'm mixing it up a little bit. This is what we originally started as, you know, just interviews and things like that. So I've been doing true crime lately. So we're welcoming back in Tony A., the Wizard. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. The invitation, you know what? It's dope being here. It's my second time here. I'm grateful and can't wait to get into it.
Yes, sir. Now, Tony, he is the creator and host of Rhodium Radio, as well as Freaky Tales, and the director of the Rhodium Mixtape Docu-Mixery, which gives you a rundown, kind of an in-depth and into the time in, during the 80s, 1984 through, I guess, all the way to 91 at the Rhodium Radio Swap Meet. And it kind of highlights Steve Yano and his booth and the bootleg mixtapes originally made by Dre.
Yes.
Right? And that's kind of where everything started. And then once he left, he passed the torch to you.
Yes.
And I watched it, and it was very well done. And it's dedicated to Steve, essentially, right?
Yes.
Okay. And from, I mean, what made you go there?
Well, I've been knowing this man since I've been 11 years old.
Okay.
And other than my mother and my father, he was probably the next person closest to me.
Yeah.
He gave me my first job. I worked with him from 11 years old till I was 13 years old. He ended up moving to a different swap meet at the time, because at the time we were selling at the Vermont Swap Meet, which is also in Gardena, just a little distance between the Vermont Swap Meet and the Rhodium. Well, I didn't see him again till I was maybe 19 or maybe late 18, 1987. You know, saw him. I got reacquainted with him again. He recognized me right away. He hadn't seen me since I was 13. I was, like I said, I was maybe 18, 19 years old at the time. And to my surprise, Dr. Dre was there with him at his booth. They were just hanging out. Eazy-E, who I was introduced to as Eric at the time, and Dre's cousin, Sir Jinx. I always tell people, if you look at the movie Straight Outta Compton, when Dre left his mom's house to go live with his cousin, that was exactly at the time when I met him. So I got to go to the house and got to see everything done there. So,
okay. You know, everyone has a story to tell. And before I met you, I never even heard of Steve Yano. And your documentary on him really.
And that's the reason, Mike, I did that, because I went to a, if you will, it was like a panel of what we call the aunts and uncles and godmothers and godfathers of West Coast hip hop. Everybody from Lonzo from the World Class Wrecking Crew, the owner of VIP Records, Calvin Anderson, the main rapper clientele of the World Class Wrecking Crew, former member of NWA, Arabian Prince. So a lot of those type of people were there.
Right.
And they all shared what their contribution to West Coast hip hop was. And one last question, I was happy with it, with the question and answer that they were giving. But what happened was, they finally asked everyone, is there anybody that's not here that should be here or that is worth mentioning?
Right.
And no one mentioned him. Now, I know for a fact that all of those guys used to take their records, give them to Steve and say, would you sell them for us on consignment? Can you put them on one of the mixtapes? Can we rap on one of your mixtapes? Because none of those guys had record deals.
Okay.
So I just felt that it was a little bit disrespectful that they didn't mention him. So I went up to all of them because I knew a lot of them, like at least 90% of the people that were there. And I said, hey, man, you knew Steve Yano, right? And he said, oh, yeah, 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 Steve. How can you even mention his name? I called them on it.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know what? You're right. You're right. They all said he should have been here or he should have been mentioned. You're correct. So I said at the time, I didn't even have a camera, no budget. I just said, I'm going to do a documentary and I want you to be in it. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay. And I didn't have a camera. I didn't have a budget, but I met a guy on Instagram that just shot me a video one day. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, I like your video. I like the quality. Would you meet me tomorrow for breakfast? And he said, yeah. And the rest is history. We knocked out a 3-hour documentary on my budget.
Yeah, and I'm going to put up all the links for that. I've watched it. I purchased it. It was 3 hours, but it was nice, man. And how long did that take to shoot?
For a team of three people, 1 year.
Okay.
We interviewed 20 people, and we still had to shoot all the B-roll footage.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally took a year to edit. Now, some people may say, it shouldn't have took that long. Some people say, no, that's about right. And I'll tell you why. I wanted to make sure that it was a hit, not a miss. I wanted to make sure that if his name was going to live on through this documentary, it had to have been done right.
Right.
And at the same time, Mike, what a lot of people may not know, I still had a job. So I was working, and whatever money I had,
sure,
this is what I was investing it in. So I had to work around not only everybody's schedule, but also around my schedule.
Right.
I was going in at 3 o'clock in the morning, getting out at 11:30 in the afternoon, and then mm-hmm. going to the gym, going on, taking a nap, showering, eating, and then going to film, and then be in bed by 9 o'clock.
Did you end up editing at your spot, or did you have to go somewhere else to do that?
No, we edited at my spot on a laptop.
You did it on the laptop?
On a laptop.
Damn.
Yes. Okay. So it, believe me, it, so when
wow.
when people say, you know what, I don't have the budget. No, man. What is that saying? Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, there always is.
So we did it. The film festival version is up for free. It's a 1 hour version of the 3 hour
yeah.
docu-mixery. And that was the one that was supposed to be entered in film festivals. And we had them all lined up, but many of them were canceled because COVID hit.
Right.
So we weren't able to do nothing.
Okay.
But I did send it to people that I knew were in the movie industry.
Right.
And I'll give them a name like Alan Hughes from the Hughes Brothers,
yeah.
who did a lot of movies.
Sure.
A guy named Rashidi Harper, who does a lot of stuff for Dr. Dre and for Snoop. Like, he's Dr. Dre's cameraman. And when I got, Tony, you're winning and you don't even know it. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
When I got those, I didn't care what anybody else said.
Right.
You know, and I sat down and I had lunch with those guys. They wanted to meet with me and say, how did you do this? What was your production budget? How many people did you have on your team? How? And I just said, it was me, this guy, and this guy.
Yeah.
And they couldn't believe it.
And to cut that on a, because I edit on, you know, desktops, but cut that on a laptop. Man,
yeah,
that's a struggle.
But you know, a lot of people are familiar with that Defiant Ones documentary.
Yeah, it was a good piece.
Okay,
a four piece.
I believe it was either a four or five series or whatever.
It was four, yeah.
So I asked him. I asked Alan, "How long did that take you?" He told me 3 years.
3 years to shoot and cut and.
Yes, 3 years, and okay. I was like, "Wow!" So mine 2 years being 3 hours wasn't that bad, and he told me you could have cut yours in four pieces.
Yeah, you could have made a series, and you still can.
Yeah, right. But I didn't know that
mm-hmm.
at the time. I just thought one big one and, you know,
right.
let it out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you started off with the podcast, Rhodium Radio Podcast, correct?
Correct.
And then went to Freaky Tales.
Yes.
And Freaky Tales is more of my thing, you know, just because obviously the horror genre and the horror love.
Yes.
I don't know if you can pick, but which one... Obviously, the music is longer withstanding over time for you, but Freaky Tales, did you think of that first and just thought, well, I can't do that right now. Let me do this. Which one? Yeah, how did that go in order?
Well, let me say this. I started the Rhodium Radio Podcast simply because I wanted to promote the docu-mixery. I thought I would only be on the Rhodium Radio Podcast for maybe 2 months, promote it, and then we're gone. But we wow. started with 238 subscribers. That night when we went live, episode one, we only had maybe about 40 people live, 45 yeah. people live. But it immediately started taking off. Like, when I say immediately, like, I was getting maybe 1,000 subscribers every other day. You know, like, that's how fast it was growing.
Yeah.
And now we average, every time we go live, at least 1,000 people live. Every single time.
Yeah.
At least. And what happened was, with Freaky Tales, I will say this, that I thought about it simply because I had a co-host, and I knew he was very knowledgeable when it came to Bigfoot, UFOs, and he was knowledgeable in the things that I wasn't knowledgeable in.
Right.
So where I left off, he would pick up, and it was vice versa.
Yeah.
You know? And so we said, let's go into it together. Let's see how it goes. We told all the Rhodium Radio fans, you know, if you guys are into the paranormal, the spooky ghost yeah. story type of stuff, subscribe. It didn't take us no more than a month to get 1,000 subscribers easy. And we had no content on the Freaky Tales page.
Mm-hmm.
like none. So we finally released like, I don't know, 16, 15 minute, like, I guess if you want to call it like a preview or commercial of what was to come. We had over 4,000 views just on that alone. So we knew it was going to be successful. But now, to answer your question, I think I started out with horror movies first before I was ever into music. Because coming from a Mexican background, my mom and dad, they just loved horror movies. They loved going to the drive-in and watching movies like The Exorcist, watching movies like Jaws, watching movies like It's Alive, Beyond the Door.
Right.
Like all these. So I was raised with that. I didn't really start discovering music, at least in my mind, till that I can remember, fourth grade.
Yeah.
That's when I started hearing certain sounds and music. I didn't really care for the people that were singing, but I would hear like a weird sound and I would ask people, what is that? But I would say movies first, then music. So if I were to pick what do I enjoy better today,
yeah,
my Rodian Radio fans are probably going to be, you know, either upset or surprised. But I would rather pick the Freaky Tales. Now, my co-host actually had to leave because he got a job. So now I'm kind of stuck in a sense inviting people over. But I enjoy it because I get to hear everybody else's stories. But I like the Freaky Tales better if I had to choose.
So you got horror movies. When you were a kid, you remember watching those. And then your experiences with the paranormal came probably after that?
Yes, yes.
Not too long after that, maybe? Or some?
No, not too long after that. You know, like, I'll give you an example of how much I loved movies. Because my first job was working at Zody's, if you remember what Zody's was.
Zody's.
After that, when I say job, like, when I was actually getting a check.
Sure.
Before that, I was selling vinyls and cassettes at the Swami at 11 years old. My first job was 16. And then by, I will say when I got let go from there, I got a job at a video store.
Right.
And all I used to watch there was horror movies. And so one day I came home and whatever money I had saved up, I told my mom, hey, let's open up a video store. Mm-hmm. And this is in the 80s. I said, I know how to run the business.
Yeah.
And she said, really? I go, I know where the guy goes and buys all his movies and everything. Let's do it. And it was very successful. I was here for about a year and a half, but here was the deal. It was only me working it, like from 9 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have anybody else doing it. You know, we had people that volunteered. Yeah. We hired certain people, but they weren't as, if you will, as dedicated as I was.
Right.
But it really started off like my Rodian Radio podcast. It took off like through the roof early on.
Yeah.
And then after, it would just started dying down because I would tell my mom, I'm only working 5 hours a day. You know, I didn't have a life. And this was 7 days a week.
Yeah.
From 9 to 9.
Damn.
You know, for a whole year, year and a half. You know, and I was just like, can't do this anymore. But I specialized in horror movies.
Okay.
So, yes.
So you feel just comfortable with horror movies. It doesn't so much scare you, or maybe you like the scare.
I like the scare, but to me, the scariest movie of all time is still The Exorcist. So, yeah, that one, even to this day, I kind of stay away from. It's just something about that movie.
Yeah, that movie, and right now, actually, if anyone has Shudder, I don't know if you have the app, it's Shudder. It's a Netflix, pretty much, horror movies. That's it.
Yes.
Old to new to you know, the 80s and 90s, whatever the case is, so... 2019, I believe it was, they released one called, a documentary called Leap of Faith, sitting down with William Friedkin, the director of The Exorcist. Just him. That's it. And check it out if you haven't. The insight and the behind the scenes of this of this film is historical. You know, the stuff he went through to get the right score he wanted. I mean, he lost friends behind it, you know. People that, you know, didn't. There was one composer in particular, I forgot his name, presented the score for him for the opening scene, you know, when they're doing a dig.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a real dig, and they shot that dig. Friedkin wanted the sounds of the picks hitting the sand, and this composer cat, you know, had this booming kind of orchestra, and it was a beautiful orchestra, you know.
Right.
But Friedkin said, that's just not going to work. Can we try something else? And the guy wasn't willing to do that, you know. So he went with the original, with just the picks and the sounds out there. So what I found the most intriguing from that documentary was how he found the voice of the demon. And he was getting different, you know, tapes sent in of demons. You know, you get your standard demon voice.
Right.
But he felt, and this is genius, he wanted somebody that sounded like a man and a woman. Okay? And then that's where he found the actress Mercedes McCambridge. Okay? Mm-hmm. And it's creepy. If you go to any of her other movies and hear her dialogue, she has that mix of a man and a woman. You know, I'm getting kind of the chills now thinking about it, especially how it went down.
Here are some examples of how Mercedes McCambridge dubbed the demon voice into Linda Blair's original voice tracks.
You might loosen these straps then.
You might loosen the straps then.
I'm not Reagan.
I'm not Reagan.
Your mother's in here with us, Karis. Would you like to leave a message? I'll see that she gets it.
Your mother's in here with us, Karis. Would you like to leave a message? I'll see that she gets it.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
What an excellent day for an exorcism. Then you might loosen the strap. I am not Regan, the devil. The devil now kindly undo these traps.
Where's Regan? She's in here with us, my friend.
We are Legion.
Anyways, what she would do is strap herself to a chair. Whiskey, cigarettes, she drank raw eggs, and she would have a priest kind of in the room on standby because she was going off the realm. And this is how she would do this dialogue, you know.
Really?
You know what she did? Your cunting daughter, you know, all that stuff. You know, your mother sucks, cunt, you know, cocks in hell.
Yeah.
All that stuff was on whiskey, bro. Was on raw eggs, chain smoking, and sitting strapped to this chair in this room. And that's where she found that. You know what I mean? She pulled from that. You know, Leap of Faith, man. Check it out. It's an incredible documentary. And, yeah, The Exorcist, man. Probably the most scariest movie for me as well.
I mean, if you really think about that, okay, what would make a person think, maybe if I'm tied down, maybe if I smoke some cigarettes, maybe if I drink, like, what would make her think of that?
Yeah.
To come up with that voice, and then to have a priest.
Yeah, didn't have a priest on standby, you know, just because, and she probably obviously was a religious person, but she knew where she had to go mentally to get there. And the whiskey and all that took her there.
Do you mind if I share a story?
Sure. And, yeah, that's what we're here for.
And this happened, I want to say early 2020. There was a female that used to come to Rodian Radio.
Okay. As a guest?
Yes, as a guest. She always wanted to be a part of this team. And I wasn't sure about it, you know, because a lot of people wanted to join Rodian Radio because it was the podcast that everyone kept saying, this is the podcast that everybody wants to be on, especially if you're a Chicano rapper.
Okay.
Okay, because we didn't have a Latino MTV or Latino BET that was showcasing or interviewing Chicano rappers.
Right. Okay?
So people kind of saw me as that. That wasn't my intention, but that's where it was going. So this person came one day, and this person always had a very, very soft voice. Mm-hmm. You know, everything was like, hi, Tony. Hi, John. Hi, Brian. Right. Whatever. She always had a real soft voice. And then one day, I just saw her almost like beating up her cell phone because she was, I guess, arguing with someone, like texting back and forth. She would put it down. And we were about to go live, maybe in about 30 minutes. She just happened to show up early. And she
was on the side.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So she just kept like, and I finally told her, are you okay?
Yeah.
And she said, I have to make a phone call. All right, cool. So she went outside. I'm sitting there. And all of a sudden, I start hearing this voice. Check this out, you motherfucker. You tell that son of a bitch that if he ever this and he ever that, watch what's going to happen to him. And I'm like, the hell? So the guy who's setting up my show for the night,
yeah.
I asked him, do you hear that? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, somebody's out there? And I go, yeah. So in my mind, like somebody came in through my gate and is yelling at her.
Because it wasn't her voice.
No, it wasn't
her knowledge. Right.
It wasn't her voice. And it sounded like a man. And he goes, so you tell him what the fuck I said. So I said, I'll be right back. So I grabbed the bat and I walked outside and I see her. Like I said, you tell that motherfucker he's about to get set up and...
Yo.
So she looks at me and she goes like this. Can you give me 1 second? And I said, what the hell? So I went back inside.
You got the bat in hand.
Yeah, so I told my friend, that was her, bro, and there's nobody out there with her. And he was like, what the fuck? I go, yeah, man. So, what was all that about? I asked her. Oh, it's just somebody that keeps harassing me, and then I had to check them, you know. Don't worry about it. Well, let me tell you this. I had somebody that was actually in a relationship with her soon after that.
Okay.
And this person called me and he told me, I want to ask you, since you know this person.
right.
Did this person ever yell or talk to you like in a man voice?
What the fuck?
And I knew exactly what and who he was talking about.
You didn't bring that shit up to him, right?
No. I never brought up to nobody. This is the first time I'm actually sharing this. I never brought it up to anybody.
Okay, so he hit you up and you're like, okay.
Yeah, and he told me and I go, what would happen? I just told her that I didn't want to be with her no more, that, you know what, it's time for us to go our separate ways. Mm-hmm. I wish you well. And he goes, and she kept begging me, and she kept telling me, no, I love you, you know, please, yeah. I want to work things out. And I just finally told her, like, hey, listen, I don't know how else to tell you. He goes, and then she scared the fuck out of me. And I was like, what happened? She said, all right then, you motherfucker, you just wait what's going to happen to you. He goes, Tone, I got fucking scared, bro. I go, I never felt like that before with another dude. He said, but this person really scared the fuck. It was a different voice. He goes, it wasn't her anymore. He goes, what do you think it could be? I said, I don't know, man. I didn't care to elaborate, but I said, listen, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I heard that voice, and it came from that person. And I said, and if you ask me, and this is just me, I said, if you ask me, I don't think that person is right spiritually. As a matter of fact, I'll even go as far as saying, because I witnessed it, that this person could be demonically possessed.
Did it sound something like a man and a woman merged?
It sounded just like Linda Blair in The Exorcist. So when you said mix with the man and the woman,
that's
exactly what I heard. Because this person could switch it on and off.
Yeah. So she didn't come back?
No.
Right,
no,
right.
No.
Yeah, that's that. That's exactly what Freakin' wanted, man, was that merge, what you're describing. And that's now, what he got.
I wonder if he heard that before somewhere. Or what made him come with that idea of a man and a woman together? That's like, kind of like saying, I want a cat and a dog together.
You know? Just as a director, I think creatively, at least what I got out of the interview,
that's
just what he saw. He saw that. That's what he heard in his mind. Not your typical demon voice, you know, where it's a woman or a man. And if you listen to her, man... It's a merge.
See, that was the scary part. Now, I want to say, because I believe the woman passed away already, correct?
I would think so, yeah. I haven't confirmed that, but... Yeah.
Yes, we'll look it up, because several years ago, when I say several years ago, I want to say it was... she was on Howard Stern, if I'm correct.
The actress?
Yeah, the lady with the voice.
Okay, let me look her up while you're...
Yeah, and what happened was he asked her, can you do some of those voices? And she said, okay. And I'm just listening to this on audio. And she started doing that. And then they were like, okay, okay, stop. Because they were freaking everybody out. But to me, if you look at Freaky Tales, we actually start off with The Exorcist.
Right.
And then we end with her laughing.
Right.
You know? And everybody always tells me, dude, every time I watch Freaky Tales, something freaky happens or I hear something, you know. But they always tell me that they tend to watch Freaky Tales only after the intro. They say, I don't want to watch the intro, you know. But to me, I had to put that part of Linda Blair when her throat goes up.
Yeah.
You know, like balloons.
Yeah.
Because as a kid, seeing that, I was liking, like, what is that? Mm-hmm. Why that? You know, how come is it? It was just freaky to me.
Yeah.
You know, it was demonic to me. And then when the person laughs, and then when she's staring at the priest, and then she's sticking her tongue out and going, doing all that.
You let your mother die. You know what I mean? Yes, stuff like that, dude. Is like, yo.
Now, okay, if you had to give it a go, because like my son, he was like, that movie's okay. That movie, now, mijo, you have to understand that movie was ahead of its time.
Yeah.
How many years or decades would you say that movie was ahead of its time?
Probably, I'm gonna say 4 or 5 decades. I'm gonna say that was in 73. That rivals what you would see probably now with special effects and things like that. Absolutely.
You know what's funny? I always said 20 years, but I have to kind of agree with you. You're right. Now, let me ask you this. Have you ever seen anything more frightening, scarier than that?
Movie-wise?
Yes, correct.
No, but... But this guy here, Mr. Barlow?
Yes.
I think if that movie was shot differently, that would have rivaled it, I think. Because as a kid, I have memories of that guy.
Yes.
You know?
Of course.
But if I'm comparing the two movies, Exorcist would beat that out.
Yes. Good,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, I've been scared at a lot of movies, original Halloween, Halloween 2, you know, the Friday the 13th as a kid, Poltergeist as a kid. But... I remember as a kid not wanting to look in my brother's crib because I just saw her face.
Yes.
You know, what if she's in there looking at me, you know what I mean? Or,
yes, always. I remember, you know, as a kid I had a cheap bed, okay?
Right.
And I used to hear a spring, you know, spring up in my bed, and right away I started thinking as a kid, my bed's going to start shaking. Because I think at one point, I'm sure there was... thousands of people that were possibly even afraid to sleep in their bed because thinking that it was going to jump up and down.
Yeah.
I remember I would move around on my bed, my little cheap bed that I had, and I'm here. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's going to start jumping up and down.
Sure.
And I remember my mom used to scare me. Si no te portas bien, if you do not behave yourself, the devil's going to go into you. That's what she used to tell me as a kid.
Right.
And I know she used to pretty much mean that as... go to bed now, you know, be good. Not, I don't think to terrify me on purpose, but to scare me, like, be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, or else the devil, se te va a meter el diablo. That's what she used to tell me, so.
Yeah. I mean, even let's look at the filmmaking of that movie, right? In the 70s, early 70s. Even the editing, right?
Yes.
When Kara sees his mom going down the stairs of the subway, you got to cut. Quick little frame cuts of that demon.
Yes.
Terrifying, right? The shot of Karis's mom on the same bed as Reagan, you know, with the light and all around her, looking up at him. Like, seriously, man, I'm getting, you know what I mean? So those were terrifying as well. It wasn't even so much the special effects. I mean, it was, but it was also the audio, right? Obviously, Linda Blair's and Mercedes' his voice. You got the cuts of the demons, just cut in there real quick.
Yeah.
When the priest rolls up, obviously the famous poster shot and the light coming through, which was based on a painting that Friedkin liked, you know, with the light coming through.
Really?
Yeah, I forgot the name of the painting, but it's all in Leap of Faith. And he knew that was going to be the shot right there, man.
I'm going to have to check that documentary. Because I think somebody installed that in my son's TV. Because he's got a huge TV as well in his room. So I believe that's there. But I'll tell you another thing. When Linda Blair, when they go get checked out and they run a needle through, you know, or what is it, her neck or whatever?
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, just so much stuff. Another one that freaked me out, remember Captain Howdy, where all of a sudden the Ouija board, it moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when I saw that as a kid, I thought to my, I didn't see that as a board game that I won. I'm like, why did it move by itself?
Right.
You know, now let me ask you this, because I know you love movies. I know you study this movie. You know a lot about it. When she got demonically possessed, do you think in the movie that the director was trying to tell us that the demon came in through that Ouija board?
I don't know if he was specifically trying to say that, maybe, but I thought maybe it had something to do with the relic that the guy brought back from the dig from the beginning, maybe something there, but maybe that was a conduit as well.
Right.
I don't think he mentions that in the documentary, but that's a good conduit to bring a demon, right? Obviously, that's where you open the door for it, you know?
Right. I looked into Ouija boards, and then one thing that stood out to me.
Yeah.
And it said this, it wasn't made for us to contact whoever's on the other side. It was made for them to contact us. So when I saw this Captain Howdy thing, I thought to myself, possibly she opened up what they call portals or a door.
Right.
And it came in. That's because I try to figure out, how did she get possessed?
Yeah.
And I know the priest found the relic,
mm-hmm.
but how do we make the connection with Reagan? Yeah, because there's really no other connection between her and a mm-hmm. demonic being other than possibly just that.
Right.
So.
Did you ever mess with those Ouija boards as a kid?
You know what?
Hasbro or somebody had.
Yeah, I've had friends that have had them, mm-hmm. maybe like two different guys that have had them, and they just all told me that it didn't work.
Right.
And I was like, maybe the demon needs batteries, you know, I don't know.
Right, but right.
I'll tell you one thing that did work.
Okay.
And one guy, he showed this to me. I was a teenager. And he said, let me go get it. See, because this thing doesn't work, is what he said. We actually put our hands on the Ouija board before I shared with you what we did after.
Right.
And I'll be honest, we asked it a question, and it's supposed to move to spell something out or whatever. But I really felt like he was moving it. I never really felt inside like, okay, this thing is working.
Yeah.
You know, and we tried it several times. So I can't sit here and say, you know, is somebody there? Yes. You know, nothing happened like that. But he went and got six pencils. I don't know if you've ever heard of this.
No, I've heard of a pencil.
Okay. Say we put a pencil to lay across
mm-hmm.
this way. We put one pencil laying across this way, one pencil laying across this way. So it's almost like a U.
Mm-hmm.
You're making a U with these pencils.
Right.
So what you do, you grab the pencils by the edges. So now you're picking them up. You have two pencils pointing that way,
mm-hmm.
one pointing this way. So you're holding them like this by the edges.
Right.
You do the same thing. Then what we do, we put the ends of the pencils to touch each other. Okay?
Okay.
We're just holding them. We ask it a question, and this is yes, and this is no.
Wow.
And let me tell you something, they were moving. All we had to do was just hold them like this to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this.
And then, okay.
So every time we asked it a question, these pencils would go like this.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, let me tell you something. And that one right there really freaked me out. And I would say, you know, are you an angel? And then this one or right here would go.
No.
That was no.
Right.
And then we would, are you a demon? This one over here. What the hell? You know, so I told him, we need to stop. You know, we need to stop. I knew he was a little bit into some, I don't know what, if it's demonic or voodoo or. I don't know what he was involved in, but I know he was involved in something because this guy would have snakes and scorpions and tarantulas all over his house. Whether that's attached. He has something going. So one day he asked me, do you want to see somebody levitate? And I said, well, how do you do that? And he said, well, let me show you.
How old were you?
Maybe 18 years old.
Okay.
And went to his house. There was a guy there. He weighed at least And when I say this, I'm being 100 with you. At least maybe 300, 320. At least.
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to make him levitate.
Shit.
And I said, there's no way. There's no way.
Right.
Nobody in there believed him. It was me, him, the heavyset guy, and two other guys. So five guys all together. So he told the heavyset dude, which I'm not going to give away any names.
Right.
He told him, sit on the chair. And he told, and I'm not going to show how we did it because I don't want nobody to try this. But we all put our hands over his head a certain way, both hands.
Okay.
And then he said, now everybody pull your hands apart in the same order that we put them in. You go first. We move one hand. The other guy moved the other hand. Mm-hmm. I move my hand. He moved my hand. He goes, now we do the other. So we had to do with something like that. So he told me, put your finger, just your finger, under his knee. Under his knee right here. And then you put it under his knee. I'll put it under his underarm. You put it under his arm. Just with one finger. That's it.
Yeah.
And he says, when I count to three, we lift him up, and his head is going to touch the ceiling. And I said, there's no way. And he said, let's do it. And we picked him up. And I'm not going to lie to you, Mike, he was light as a feather.
This 300-pounder?
Yes. Light as a feather. We picked him up, and he freaked out before his head can touch the ceiling. He freaked out. He started shaking, and he fell because we couldn't hold him. It was almost like something was broken.
Damn.
But that's about the only supernatural thing that I could say I've ever been involved in. And it freaked me out because after that, I was like, I'm good with you, bro.
Yeah, because that right there would be a selling point. Like, yeah, there's some shit out there.
Yeah.
Because I don't have any stories, but something like that would kind of...
Yeah, and this guy who I did this with, he's still around, you know. As a matter of fact, this guy has died, was pronounced brain dead, okay?
The big guy.
No, the guy who showed us how to do this.
Right.
He died, was pronounced brain dead, okay?
Right.
And over a few hours, the doctors came back in and caught him sitting up.
Yeah.
Okay? This guy is still alive today. He's still alive. And he shared with me a story of what he saw, according to him, in the afterlife. This same person, again, I'm not going to give away any names, but told me that, because I asked him, man, you were dead like for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
They pronounced you brain dead. And he said, yeah. He said, my mom, my grandmother, everybody was there to say their goodbyes. And all I remember is just waking up. And I said, do you, and I'm almost afraid to even ask this.
Yeah.
You know, I said, did you see anything? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay, do you mind sharing? And he said, okay. He said, come over the house. And I'm like, oh, man. So I went over there. And he said that, he says waking up. He goes, when I woke up, not waking up from his death, but I guess in whatever, wherever he was, everything was just pitch black. Where he goes, I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face. He said, and I looked down and I knew I was stepping on black water. He said, I couldn't really see everything was just black. He said, but little by little, I saw a little tiny, tiny light. So I started walking towards the light. He said, and I saw a figure. He goes, I think it was a man, but it was blacker than the black that I was surrounded by.
So you can see that silhouette of him.
Yes. And he said, as he got closer and closer and closer, that the only thing he saw was the inside of his torso. And he said, and you know how a lava lamp, he said, the lava goes up and down.
Yeah.
He said, imagine like 6 to 8 lava lamps in his body, and everything in there was just going up and down. He goes, it was just different, like beautiful colors. And I said, were you scared or anything? He said, no. He goes, so we approached each other. He said, and I didn't hear a voice, but I knew he was telling me, here, you can stay.
Yeah.
Or you can go back home. And he said, pretty much said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go back home. He said, and then that's when I woke up.
I wonder what it was or what he thought it was, who it was.
Here's what he said. I think if I would have stayed, it would not have been good. He said, that's just the feeling. He said, because I didn't get a feeling of I'm home, this is heaven.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I didn't. So I'm not going to elaborate on what that was because he didn't even know what that was.
Yeah. You know, in junior high, I have something kind of like that. I'm not as, you know, crazy as that with the lava lamps. But I remember in junior high, there was this game where you breathe 20 times, right? You go, and then somebody comes behind you.
Squeezes you.
Yeah. So they did it to me, and I passed out. When I passed out, though, I remember what I saw when I passed out. I'm not saying it's one thing or another, or maybe it was just my mind. It was like I was inside of a spinning, like a tornado, but everything was white, and I was looking up. And then I woke up. And I don't know what that means. It could be just, you know, what my brain was delivering, or it could be something else. I don't know, but...
Right.
Looking back, I shouldn't have done that dumb shit, you know what I mean? Because I've heard kids die doing that. Because you're cutting off the air, pretty much. Right. Yeah, to the brain.
Do you remember that movie... where these people were doctors and then they would pretty much kill themselves to see what's in the afterlife?
Old one? Is it an old movie? 80s?
If I'm correct, Keith Sutherland said, "It's a good day to die." That's how the movie started. Yeah, they were all doctors and they would like put me under, but make sure you bring me back. And then they would see things in the afterlife.
Okay.
And many of them were upset because they didn't see that light at the end of the tunnel or what they thought. They actually saw their past. But they actually made a remake.
Damn, I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
Flatliners.
Flatliners.
Yeah. Sleepers is another Kevin Bacon one.
Yeah. Flatliners. Now, let me ask you this. I know you're familiar with the movie. Would you ever try that?
No.
No, you can't play with life like that.
Especially with the family here. Now, I probably wouldn't try it if I didn't.
And that's that's one question that a lot of people, since I started Freaky Tales, off camera, they ask me, "Are you afraid to die?" And here's what I always say. I will answer it this way. I know I'm not ready to die.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 53 years old, but I know I'm not ready to die. There's still a lot that I still want to do, you know. As much as I've traveled already, Mike, I don't feel that I've done what I've needed to do here. I still have family, you know. So, but yeah, I just know that I'm not ready. But that's a big question.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to mess with that. I mean, I don't think I'm afraid to die. The only thing I'm afraid of doing is, well, dying and then hurting.
Yes, family.
You know, the family. So yeah, it's not something I would try to do.
Because I've known people that have told me, "Oh, you know, I don't care. You know, and I hear kids today dying, whether it's drugs, gang violence, or whatever, at 21 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I'm 53. I feel like I haven't even lived. Mentally and physically, I still feel like I'm in my 28 or 30 years old, you know? And these kids haven't even began to live, and they're already getting taken out.
Yeah.
But the number one question is, what happens after you die? People always ask me. Mm-hmm. And I said, I guess one day we'll find out.
Yeah. Okay, so... On back to Freaky Tales, I remember you hit me up like, "Hey, do you have any ghost stories?" Or the truth is, I don't. You know, so I was like, "Hey, I'd come on for nothing." You know what I mean? Because I don't have anything. And I wanted to ask you, do you think my love for horror and having all these things somehow protects me from that kind of stuff?
You know,
silly theory. I don't know, but it's just a thought that I've had over the years. My mom would be like, "Why do you like all this?" And I always told my mom that don't look at it as they're coming after me. Like, Michael's protecting me, essentially. You know what I mean? These masks are here with me. So, I don't know.
You know, I never thought about that. But I will say this, that when I called you up to be a guest on Freaky Tales, I thought, he's got to have some stories.
Right.
Dude, as much as horror he likes and as masks that he collects, and he's a real collector. He, like, truly loves this stuff. He's got to have at least 3 to 4 or 5 stories. And then we said, "I don't have nothing." And I was like, no, dude, I got to get you on here somehow.
Right.
You know? So I don't, honestly, Mike, I don't know if I can answer that, but it does trip me out that one day you didn't walk in here and you saw Michael Myers turn his back on you, or the head of Linda Blair, you know, turn her neck or something, you know? I wonder, though, if that would have happened, would that stop you from coming in here?
Maybe. I don't know. I'd probably have to get rid of this stuff if that happened. I know my son, he shuts these doors during the day when no one's here and it's just her, because he doesn't even want to even really think about it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, maybe it does protect me, but I don't, I've never seen anything, at least to my knowledge.
Like, you know who I feel I'm talking to? Remember that kid in the movie Salem's Lot that used to collect the masks and stuff? That's you.
Mark Petrie, yep.
Yeah, yep. You know, and it's funny because that movie and those scenes of him is what made me want to start collecting masks.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I know he would paint and he would show, like, oh, this is a ghoul and this is this.
Yeah.
And as a kid, you're like, that's so cool.
He had some badass masks. He had some badass artifacts. In the book, it's a little different. When Mr. Barlow, first of all, in the book, speaking of Salem's Lot, he speaks. Like, he'll fuck with people. You know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah, he sits there and watches them, and then they'll come up to him. And in the book, well, his servant guy, right?
Uh-huh.
In the book, when he grabs the kid we're talking about?
Yes.
The kid was into, like, Houdini, you know?
Yes.
He was into that stuff. So in the book, the way he was able to get out of the restraints he was tied up in is when he was being tied up, he would, and they say this is what Houdini did, that's the theory, he would inhale, right? So they'll tie you up, and then when your dude leaves, you come off, right? And that's how the kid in Salem's Lot was able to get out of that.
You know? Wow. You know what? Wow.
I mean, I don't know how true all that is, but...
Hey, you know what? I mean, it might be true, because I know I've heard stories about Houdini being double-jointed as well.
Yeah.
That he used to be able to pop bones out of socket and get out and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's funny we mentioned that, because I totally forgot about that part. And one of the things that I learned a lot from my father, what should I say, he introduced me to, number one was black and white horror movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, of course, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Sure.
You know, the Boris Karloff, the Lon Chaney, the
Bela.
Bela Lugosi. Yeah. And then later on, he introduced me to magic. You know, he just knew very little, but he was always intrigued with magic. I love the Tony Curtis Houdini movie.
Okay.
I love that movie.
I haven't seen that in years. I have memories of it when I was little.
Oh, man, you need to go back. And then the music, and then it's so sad at the very end when he dies. But my dad introduced me to that. And then there was another guy named Doug Henning. He was another magician. But it was funny because my dad would introduce me to horror and magic at the same time. And that movie, Salem's Lot, had both.
Yeah, it did. What's your take on magic? What's your take? You see David Blaine do some crazy shit, bro, right?
Yes.
Copperfield. Stuff that I can't explain.
Right.
But yet, I like to think I'm a logical person, right? So something's going on there that we're just not seeing. But I can't explain it either.
Yeah, I can't explain it. Now let me tell you what I thought growing up.
You're right.
Whenever, and this is, I think every kid thinks this when they cannot explain it. He sold his soul to the devil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think witchcraft, sorcery, whatever.
Yeah.
I had a friend that used to perform at the Magic Castle in Hollywood. And this guy was such a close friend of mine. He still is. He would actually reveal to me the secrets.
Which is a big no-no, right, for magicians? It's
big-time no-no. But he knew that I would never go around telling people.
Okay.
He trusted me. You know, we have so much love for each other that he's like, I can tell you anything, bro, because I know you're a good dude.
Right.
But when he would tell me things, and there's no way you could have made that float.
Right.
There's no way. And he was like, dude, it's a lot easier than you think. And I goes, if I show you, you're going to be like, oh, come on. He goes, that's why we don't show people.
Mm-hmm.
Because to some people, it's like, that's stupid. And when he showed me, that is stupid. Like, really? That's it? And he goes, that's why we don't ever give away our secrets. Because there was a lot of things that he did in front of me. And it was like, dude, there's no way. Okay, this guy levitated off the ground like this in front of me.
Right.
In front of me.
Right.
And then I go, dude, like, I told him like this. If there's anything I want you to show me, how do you do that? I want to be able to levitate. That's what he said. And he goes, I never left the ground.
This isn't the 300-pound story. This is a separate story.
A separate story.
So he never left the ground.
He never left the ground.
Okay.
And here's what he said, and I won't say how he did it.
Okay.
And it was the same way David Blaine did it, if you watch him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, it's all within the lighting and the angle that I stood in front of you. He goes, and then I took your attention away from my feet and onto my face and arms. And what he did, you know, he pretty much, I won't show you from the legs down,
yeah,
but he pretty much went like this, and he pretty much somewhat looked like he went into a trance. He rolled his eyes back. So now I'm looking at him, and I saw him go up. And then now I take a quick look, and he's already coming back down. So in my mind, I'm like, holy crap, it was all so quick.
So it's like a slight turn, and then he's using the hidden leg.
Pretty much.
Right.
But David Blaine did it, and I kept rewinding and rewinding, and it was the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I seen David Blaine open up like a fruit or something, right? And he had like a card in there.
I saw the same thing. He did it for me, too.
Great. I don't know.
Yeah, he did it for me, too. And he shows, I'll show you how to do it. And then every trick that he showed me, I was like, I'm going to be honest with Mike. I was like, this is so dumb. Mm-hmm. And he would laugh. And he was like, that's why we never give away our tricks.
I know like certain card tricks. I've heard some of the secrets there. Like if I got a deck of cards and I go, pick a card, right? And I shuffle it. What he'll do is slightly hold the three of hearts just enough for you to see it.
For you to pick it.
I don't know how he, yeah, and I don't know how he would even do that, but there are ways.
Yeah, that part, I don't know how he would actually even do that to make you pick it.
Yeah.
And it's usually always a red card for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, the biting of the coin, you ever see that?
Yeah.
You know,
like in half?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he spit it out. When he first did that, I was shocked.
Yeah.
And then he would give me the quarter, and I was like, dude, there's no way. You know? And then he would, like, you know, I don't know, take a dollar and put it in right here, blah, 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 and it's gone. And it's gone. And
right.
He showed me all of those tricks, but it got to the point, Mike, where I said, don't show me no more because I'm not going to like magic anymore. Mm-hmm. But so he took me to the magic castle to go see his friend.
Yeah.
And there was no way that he could have done this. His friend was doing magic tricks the whole time and talking to the audience the whole time. So what he does, he's doing magic trick, you know, with his cards, you know, this, and this, and that. He does maybe like a 10-minute set. Then he brings out an egg, and then he kind of like, it was weird. He kind of puts his cards over it, whatever, and he makes it disappear.
The egg?
Yeah, the egg. So then he looks at everybody, and people are like, huh? And then he goes, and he takes it out. Yeah. It was in his mouth. There's no way he could have done that. Nobody ever saw him do this.
Right.
And there's no way he could have had it on the side of his cheek.
Right.
So we never knew. He even said, I don't know how he did that. But he had an entire egg come out of his mouth when he made it disappear in front of the cards.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I used to believe as a kid, oh, these guys are demonic. Yeah. They sold their soul to the devil and blah, blah, blah. Now he told me, Tony, it's just a trick. That's all it is. But sometimes I find it hard to believe.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. What's your take on it?
Some of the stuff I've seen like David Blaine do, not in person, but on, you know, on video, I think, okay. Because I look at things as an editor.
Yes.
When I watch a lot of movies and TV shows like this, the reality shows, I can tell, okay, first of all, why is there a camera there?
Yes.
There shouldn't be there. Shouldn't be one there if this is the same scene, you know? So I kind of look at things like that. Now, when I see David Blaine stuff, some of his stuff is done without cutting.
Without cutting. And not in the open.
Yeah. So I don't have an explanation for it.
You
know what I mean? It sucks. I don't think there's anything supernatural, but I can't explain anything logical about it. You know what I mean?
No, it's the same thing with me. Like, just little things. Like, one time he put a coin on somebody's hand,
yeah,
and then he just kind of went like this,
mm-hmm,
and then he kind of covered it, lifted up, and the coin wasn't there no more. You know, or he takes somebody's cup of coffee,
right,
and he just starts, like, off the street, and he just starts, and then all of a sudden, all these coins come up, and he gives it to the homeless man.
So how do you do that?
That
unless it's a plant before, right? Unless the cup's already used.
Or unless that's a fake bum.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And the reaction that he gets from people, they're what? And that's what magicians love.
And usually you have things with things that happen in life. There's usually like some people that'll say, oh, that's what it is, right? Or, oh, no, that's what it is. With magic tricks, I don't see that. I always see everyone going, how the fuck did he do that?
Yes.
There's no one going, oh, I saw you do that, or I saw that coin.
Right.
And how is that? How did they do that? I have no clue.
Did you ever see the one where he separated people's bodies?
Blaine?
Yes.
Probably years ago. I've watched a bunch of his stuff. But
there's a lady that walks up to a bench. She sits down. There's never any cuts. tells her to lay down on the bench out in the open. And he has somebody that's walking by. I don't know if he's a part of the crew or whatever. He does something to her. She's laying flat on her back. He says, now pull her legs and I'll pull her arms. And he pulls it and the legs get up and walk away.
Just legs?
Just legs.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw him do something like that with a sheet. Some chick was sitting on a chair outside, coffee shop. He puts a sheet over her, no cuts. Pulls the sheet off and she's gone. Now, I don't know. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
I mean, I know you can do that in movies, right? Big budget CGI and stuff like that. I don't know, maybe that's what's going on. I don't know.
I mean, if I saw that in person and he made you disappear... I don't know if I would want to be around that person. Like, that's the first thing that kind of goes through your mind. Like, what's up with this guy?
Yeah, if he made me disappear, I think the first thing, you know, you're going to ask me, dude.
Where did you go?
Where did you go? You know what I mean? How do you even do that, you know?
Right.
So magic is, like I said, I can't explain it. I don't think it is anything supernatural, but logically, I can't explain none of that shit.
Let me share something, and this may seem like a trip to some people, but I read this many years ago because my father showed it to me.
Okay.
And he told me magic, he said, is in the Bible. And I was like, it's in the Bible?
Okay.
And he said, yeah. I said, all right. So he said in the book of Exodus, Moses came and threw his rod on the floor to Pharaoh to let my people go, and it turned into a serpent. He said his actually rod.
Right.
And then he said that Pharaoh called two of his magicians and they threw their rods on the ground. And it turned into serpents, and Moses' serpents ate both of them up. Then Moses picked it back up, and it became his rod again. My dad said, that's okay. Magic there. And I was like, oh. And then this is what he said, which I thought was pretty crazy. If people believe the Bible's true or whatever, but this is just a story he shared. He said, Moses was on God's side, and Pharaoh, we don't know what side he was on, but they both knew magic. Mm. And I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. So.
Yeah, that's... So what's your take on the these movies dealing with religion? Like The Nun, Exorcist, what we talked about, obviously, you know, Conjuring, things like that that kind of deal with...
Well, you know what? It's funny. If I was a religious person, you know, which I'm not, but I would say that I think it would tick me off that they make evil look more powerful than good.
Right.
You know? But they're just movies.
Yeah.
You know, and people have to understand that. It's Hollywood, you know, to entertain people. There's a huge fan base for it, so I get it. Now, as far as these kind of movies, I think they do a great job of, you know, entertaining people. Of course, I don't think that they're real. Some movies, I think, that possibly have some truth in them.
Yeah.
You know, but let's go to, like, the movie, The Conjuring 1.
Mm-hmm.
That one, the part that really freaked me out was when the couple... go to the family's home, and when they walk in, the woman sees the shadow around those kids.
Right.
I've seen stuff like that. So, you know, when I saw that, I said to myself, whoever did this must have known or seen or did their homework to do that.
Right.
Because the first time that I ever seen those type of shadowy figures was on Ghost, the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore. And that really freaked me out because some went up, some went down, you know? And so when I saw that in this movie, to me, I think The Conjuring 1 was probably the best out of all of this, all of them.
Okay.
But I think it's very hard, and I think possibly this is where we're going with this, to compare older movies to newer movies. I prefer the older movies.
Now, do you think that's based on our perspective now? Or, you know, relatively speaking, now, because now we saw those movies back then when we were, you know, 6, 7, 8, scared us then.
Yes.
And I guess it doesn't matter how, you know, what the reasoning is, but I just wonder, do you look at the movies now and go, ah, it's too much CGI? Or it's too,
yes.
You know what I mean?
That's the reason.
Yeah.
You know, back then we had little special effects to play with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think more creativity was put into it.
Right.
You know. My opinion. And plus, I grew up with it, so I saw it. So today, those movies do not have the effect that those movies had on me. And I'll tell you why, at least coming from me.
Sure.
My opinion is that the movies that we grew up in, were way ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
There were, name me a movie today that has come out maybe within the last 20 years, the last 10 years, that we can say it was way ahead of its time.
I can't think of any now.
Me neither. At all.
Because, you know, there, all the ones we're talking about in the 70s and 60s, even the ones you were talking about, they're still remnants of that now. They're still building on those ideas now.
Yes.
Masked men, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Ghosts.
Yes.
Demonic stuff. It's still carrying on into the, you know, 2021 now. You know?
I mean, let's just take another movie, for instance. The Omen.
Okay.
Come on, you know, and now let me ask you one question pertaining to these movie, the movie question you presented to me.
Yeah.
Name me a remake that has been better than the original.
I can't right now.
Right.
Which means there's not a lot of them.
Right.
Yeah. No, I can't right now.
Yeah, same here. So it's very, very hard for me to sit here. And even though these movies are put together great, they just do not match up,
mm-mm,
you know, with the original. Like they always say, you know what? The original will always be worth more than the copy.
Right.
And to me, I'm going to stick to that. That's what I believe until I'm proven wrong,
mm-hmm,
you know. Now, I don't know if you want to jump into it, but supposedly they're coming out with a new Exorcist.
Yeah, a direct sequel to that one, which I don't know any details on it. You, as far as
absolutely none. Now you saying a direct sequel, not to The Heretic or to the first one?
To the first one, so it'll be like a Halloween 1978 and the jump to the Halloween 2018.
So they're pretty much giving the Heretic the boot.
That's my understanding right now. Yeah, direct sequel. It's a jump, and it's from Blumhouse again. So, you know,
is Linda Blair going to be in it? Do you know
that? I don't know. I was talking to my friend about it. Was it last night? I was saying, is Linda Blair going to be in it? Are we going to see her now? I mean, she still does conventions and stuff,
yes,
so she's still down, you know, for the get down,
right,
I'd imagine. Or are they going to find somebody else? I would say they're going to have to bring her back.
Sometime.
Why not?
Somehow, yeah.
They're doing it with everything else. Why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, where do you take that story? I don't know.
I know. It's gonna have to be very creative, though.
And how do you beat? How do you top that first one, man? You know,
is it possible to make it just like the way they did the first one?
With that look, that film grain kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in a sense, try to stay away from all this new technology as far as the special effects today.
Mm-hmm.
Try to stay away from it. Try to make it as raw, I guess, as you can, because, like, for an example, the first one. One of the things that scared me too.
Yeah.
Was when the door was shut and it cracked, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on, stuff like that.
Yeah. Even that what they call the spider walk, which
yes,
wasn't in, I don't think it was in the main.
No, it wasn't.
I think that's what they call the spider walk when she was coming.
Right.
Come on, man.
Now, let's be honest, if we would have saw that back then.
Right.
I think, did you ever hear the story where she said that Linda Blair said she went with her agent to the movies and then, there was a lady that was watching The Exorcist. She wanted to watch it from the back. Linda Blair was. But there was a lady that fainted in front of her.
Wow.
And Linda Blair was trying to wake her up. And her agent grabbed her. And Linda Blair said this. Like, why are you grabbing me? I wanted to help that lady. And the guy said, that lady just fainted because she saw you on the screen. Can you imagine what would happen to her if she woke up to you?
Whoa.
Yeah.
That makes sense now. Yeah.
Yeah. And Linda Blair said, wow, I never would have thought about that. But that would have just been over the top. Not over the top in a sense like that would have been too much, but it would have been even more horrific,
sure,
if you will, to see her walking down like that. I mean, just the part, think about this, at least for me, or how strange, evil, weird, all the above it was,
mm-hmm,
when she came down and she just started peeing on herself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know some people today will probably listen of this generation and will say, really? That was it?
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand the time in which that movie came out and understand that that was, like you said, decades,
mm-hmm,
ahead of its time.
Ahead of its time, man.
We've never seen anything like that before. And that's one thing I always try to explain to a lot of the younger generation. Imagine seeing something you've never seen before. And I gave this one example to my son because he loves The Matrix. So he loves the scene where the guy bends over backwards and he mm-hmm. dodges those bullets.
Right.
Okay. And I said, imagine 20 years from now, you tell your son, that was my movie. Really, Dad? Mm-hmm. The guy bending over backwards, dodging, and he kind of got it.
Right.
I go, that's how you guys see our movies.
Right.
But The Matrix was ahead of its time. At least to you it was, I told him. These movies were decades ahead of its time.
What never really scared me, though, I love the movies, but what never really got me are clowns. It never really did for me.
Same thing for me, but for some reason, it terrifies women.
Yeah. Well, I know a bunch of dudes that don't like clowns.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A bunch of dudes, yeah. They don't mess with clowns, man.
You know, growing up, it was always women that are like, oh, I can't stand clowns. Clowns. For me, I was like, it's a clown.
Yeah,
I never understood that either, but obviously there is some type of fear out there.
Right.
You know, for these clowns. Now, I will say this, that by my house, there was a guy. What was that clown's name that went around killing people in real life?
Are you referring to John Wayne Gacy?
That guy.
Okay.
Okay. I just knew him as Gacy. There was a guy that used to hang out at a park two blocks away from me.
L.A.?
By my house.
Okay.
Okay, in the city of Wilmington. Literally, I say two blocks away, but it's really one long block. And this guy used to hang out there dressed like a clown. And he used to walk up to families and just start doing tricks. And people didn't know who he was, like, for years.
Right.
But he just showed up and entertained families and then take off on like a 10 speed. Well, the last that I heard of him, that he had gotten arrested. I don't know for what.
Yeah.
But it wasn't good from what I heard, and nobody's ever seen him since. So.
The fact that the man itself is creepier to me than him dressed as a clown. So the man underneath all that doing that.
Yeah, and he was an older man, like at least like in his 60s and up.
Yeah.
And he was still riding a bike, dressing up like a clown, pretty much like every other day, mm-hmm. and showing up at the park and trying to play with kids.
Yeah.
You know? I don't care if you're a clown or not. You don't do that.
No, not especially now, dude.
Yeah.
One thing about horror for me is it can be very broad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It can be just kind of out there. And we talked about supernatural stuff. We talked about mass and busts and, you know, life-size stuff. And bringing it back to Freaky Tales, when I did come on, you know, we talked some true crime.
Yeah.
Which, to me, is a version of horror.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So I don't know how you took to that, all that information that day. I don't know how you are with true crime. But for me, it pulls me in, man.
No, I love it. You know what I mean? I love it. And that's why when you told me, we could talk about the Richard Ramirez, about OJ. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Because one thing, let's just say OJ for an example. I'll just use him for an example. Because whether people look at me different or not, everything points to him. It doesn't point to anyone else. And that's pretty much where I have my opinion. They're like, okay, it looks like he did it.
Right.
Okay. So, but in the public's eye, he looks innocent because he's an actor. He's an athlete.
Charming dude, man.
Charming dude. Okay. And to me, that's intriguing right there. Like, mm-hmm. this guy can, if it's him, which, like, again.
Yeah.
Looks like it is.
Mm-hmm.
How can you put this persona on?
I think you compartmentalize it for him anyway.
Yeah.
Right? If we're talking about the OJ case, you can just, maybe in your mind too, I didn't do it, you know, or I did it, but I'm good,
yeah.
You know. We're never murderers until we are, right? So with that case, with that individual, with OJ, he's wired different, in my opinion. He's just, I think, a happy dude that did some messed up stuff, obviously,
yeah.
Right? And it's of my opinion, actually strong opinion, that he did it. He killed them both.
Yeah.
That's it. Steve Thomas was one of the lead detectives on the JonBenet Ramsey case. And one of his guys that he was working with said, murders are usually what they seem to be, what they are when you roll up. That's the crime scene leaves you a rhythm of what happened. You know what I mean? So, you know, I touched on the OJ case, the Manson case, and there's another one, Jean Elroy, who was the mother of James Elroy, who was a famous crime author. And all three of those, and there's so many more, especially out of L.A., man.
Of course.
There's so many murders and even unsolved murders, but you just kind of get almost an obsession with him.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I try to break that down. Like, why is that? You know what I mean? It's just a question of like who you are as a person and how people are around you. You never really know who people are. You know what I mean? So I think for true crime, I think that's what intrigues me so much, is that we're that close to being that. Not to say everyone's cuckoo like that. You know what I mean? But you never know. And to study that, it just becomes an obsession. You know?
Yeah. No, you know what? I understand that, because there's a reason why people love things like autopsy, forensic files,
right,
the first 24 hours. Mm-hmm. There's a reason for that. Me growing up, okay, now I never played this game.
Right.
But you know what board game I always wanted and I never got? And even to this day, at my age, I go to Target and I still look at board games. Like I said the other day on my podcast, I saw a game that I wanted to buy that my mom could never afford when I was a kid, and I wanted it so bad. It was Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Okay.
And it was $15. And the reason why I didn't buy it, I said, now I can have it and play with it, but I'm thinking, I'm not going to play with it. I'm going to leave it in the box. But then I'm thinking to myself, am I going to leave it in the box so that it can remind me of my mother so that I could get sad? So I just said, I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you one board game that I always wanted, and my mother never bought it for me, but she would always buy me this dumb Monopoly.
Right.
Like, look, people love Monopoly. I was never a fan of Monopoly. I didn't say I disliked it. I wanted Clue.
Clue.
That's what I wanted. Now, think about that. That's mystery.
Yeah.
So when we watch Forensic Files and True Crime or whatever, we look for clues. Like, you look for clues. You know, you've gone to the places where these things have happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just intriguing to us. It's intriguing to me.
Yeah, it's a macabre kind of feeling. You know, you go, and I think another layer of it too, man, is this person's dead, right? And she died or he died here. Now I'm standing here.
Yes.
But I don't have the answer who did it. And so you're just in this, like, forever kind of, again, obsession with it. And
you mentioned JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the little girl?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where was she from again?
Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado. Yeah. Okay. I know people that live out in Colorado.
Okay.
And I never ask them, and maybe I'm going to send this video to them.
Yeah.
Then maybe they could tell me what happened. If I were to ask you from what you've looked into,
mm-hmm.
in a nutshell, what do you think happened?
Okay. This is all based on my research, heavy research too, by the way. So it's not just a guesstimation. It's based off, you know, one thing for me is I want the facts. Give me the facts, or what we know to be the facts, right? Witness accounts. Give me all that, then I can give you something. So I've read a few books on it, including two from two of the detectives, right? And watched countless specials on it. First of all, the intruder theory, I don't think that happened at all. That's what the parents are saying happened. They're saying, well, they went out to dinner. Some dude waited in the house, grabbed a notepad, did some practice ransom notes. Yeah. Okay. Wrote a 3-page ransom.
That already right there sounds
right. Right. If I'm breaking in your house, dog, I'm trying to get out quickly, right? So this guy's in there. He writes a 3-page letter and lies in wait in this house. I think the intruder theory is there's bogus. No chance. It's bogus. It's bogus, right? So I think they came home, as the dad said, and everybody went to sleep. I think based on the evidence, JonBenet had a bedwetting problem, and her mother would get upset at her, okay? And I think something escalated there with the bedwetting. Now, her body was found in a different outfit than what she went to bed in, right? So that's one. Two, when the detective rolled up, he noticed right next to her room in the hallway, there was an open cupboard with some diapers, like a diaper bag, halfway hanging out, okay? That's two. Three, the first officer that rolled up, it was like, I don't know, 5:45 in the morning, 6 in the morning. JonBenet's mother had the same outfit she went to the party with the last night. So she was dressed, makeup on, hair done. So the first note as a police officer was damn, she didn't go to sleep last night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She wore that last night to this dinner party at their buddy's house down the street, wherever there was at. That doesn't add up. Nor does her crying and then looking through her. The mom was crying. Then when one of the officers came upstairs, she was doing that. kind of peeking through her hands to see what the officer found. I think the mom got into some kind of scuffle with Jean-Benet, and that's what put that huge hole on the top of her head.
Wow, right? I didn't know that part.
Yeah, there's two points of contact as far as what could be looked at as, you know, what killed her, right? You got a big, I mean, it's the size of a flashlight, right? The end of a flashlight, bam, right? So big cave-in in the top of her head. They did that that rope around her neck, which was probably a stage job. So they brought her downstairs. I think the mom brought her downstairs and then thought, oh, shit, I need to stage this. Who knows what people think,
right, right,
when they do this shit. I don't think she meant to kill her daughter. So she made that garrote. So the mom had the mom was like an artist. She had like an art kit downstairs. She used that, or the killer used that, and made that garrote. There was broken paintbrushes used as part of that to tie to the garrote to pull on the back of the neck. That's all from the mom's kit downstairs, right? And then the body was put in this wine cellar downstairs. And with the blanket and everything, kind of, she was laid down kind of the way you would lay down your loved one. You know, and that's another thing. She wasn't just thrown in there.
Yeah, like a stranger would just...
Right. And so I think the mom did it. I don't think the dad was aware of it. I think the dad covered for her after. First thing that the housekeeper said when the police asked her, you know, and told her, hey, the body was found in this room. She goes, man, you really got to know that house to find that room. You know? And in the ransom note, why are you... There's so many things. The ransom note asked for $118,000. Really? $118,000. That's what they wanted. And that was, turns out that was the dad's bonus. But why ask, again, if I'm going to take your kid, why am I asking for $118,000? I'm asking probably for a couple mil, right? And then if you're going to ask for money, why do you kill her? So yeah. If you're going to ask for money and saying, I'm taking your daughter and we have her here, right, then why am I going to kill her then? You know? So to I think me, the mom did it.
To me, when you said $118,000,
yeah,
that's kind of like saying, I want $1.50.
Yeah, yeah, $118,000, right?
On a, you know, it's almost like, why don't you just round that off to, you know, why $118,000? Why not $200,000?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it just it doesn't make sense to me.
$118,000. Yeah. It just sounded like a frantic, shit. Let me write some stuff.
Right,
know? And it was like over two pages. You know, now they said they heard her say something. She called 911, and she didn't hang up the phone correctly, so the operator was like, "Hello, hello." And you can kind of hear something, but some people say you can hear that the brother was awake when they said the brother was sleeping, and you can hear some kind of verbiage. To be fair, I can't hear it.
Right. Okay.
So, and I don't think the 9-year-old brother did it, because I don't think, that's a theory out there, but I don't think the 9-year-old brother could hold his mud.
Right. So it was, would you say it was possibly an accident and then?
Yeah. Okay. And staged to look like a ransom, a kidnapping.
Wow. It's like what you said. It's what you see. That's pretty much what it is. This is what happened.
And yeah.
I don't think. Yeah. No intruder came in. I'm just shocked that none of that has ever came out yet. Like, no arrest, no nothing.
No. Patsy died. That's the mom. The dad's still alive. They could never pin it on either one of them.
For an example, if the dad were to come out and say, "I'm going to come out with a book and tell the truth," can he still get arrested for withholding?
No, but because they didn't try him. That's the thing. They didn't go to a grand jury. They didn't try him. So, like, OJ can come out as OJ did and admit it in that hypothetical on how he went, right? As he did, let's be very clear about that, everyone. As OJ did admit it, hypothetically.
Yeah.
He can't be tried again. You know what I mean? So, but, John Ramsey can, you know, there were some things that were also kind of funky in that investigation. They said that JonBenet went straight to bed. Autopsy found pineapple in her stomach, which means, and also a pineapple bowl downstairs with a spoon on it, in it, with the fingerprints of the mom and the brother. But the only thing with that is they live there. So
yeah.
You can't, you know, it's just, I don't think they had much to really,
yeah.
I mean, to be fair.
Now the question is, why does that intrigue us? It just does.
Yeah.
Certain people, it does to me. Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
We want to find out. We want to know.
Yeah. And you know, the media buildup, you know, obviously yeah. we hear about it, we learn more about it. And I'm sure there's countless murders that we don't know about that we'd be the same way, yeah. You know?
It's like maybe, you know, we won't... there's a documentary out right now, I believe, on Netflix. Remember, I believe it happened in Colorado as well, where the guy killed his wife and his two girls, his two little daughters, and then he came back.
Chris Watts.
Told the cops, oh, look, he left her ring. She left her ring. Mm-hmm. Baby, where are you?
Right.
How does a guy turn that off and on?
Yeah, and that one there, Tony, is this guy... killed his wife, then he killed his babies, and he killed one, stuffed her in the 8-inch pipe. I don't know if you saw the drums, but he stuffed them down. Right, the next one, oh man, he came back to the truck for the next one. This is in an interview. He said all this, and he said this the other daughter said, "Are you gonna do to me what you did to, you know, Cece?"
Yeah,
or I think it was Cece died first. And he just said he put the Yankee blanket over her and snuffed her out, man, and took her to the other tank. There were these two big oil drum tanks, and he just shoved their bodies in. And, yeah, you wonder how, because if you watch the videos of him, like the home videos and stuff, he's very loving with the kids. He's playing with them. And
Now, here's my question to you, and I know you can't answer this for him.
Right. I can give it a shot, you know.
Right. Yeah. Just give it a shot. And for people watching... you know, maybe in the comments, you know, did he really truly love his kids to be able to do that to them? Or was he just a great acting dad? Because for me, having children and having grandbabies, no, I'd give up my life for my family. Mm-hmm. So here we have the opposite. Mm-hmm. Did he truly ever really love them? Because for him, if I'm correct, he had a girl on the side.
Sure.
And supposedly he did it for her. Let me start over.
Yeah.
You know.
He also had a baby on the way, so essentially he killed three kids, three of his kids and his wife. And he calls the kids school and says, oh, we're moving. They're not going to be coming. So he was conscious of what he was doing. Yeah, did he really love them? I mean, I'm going to say, all I can say is I love my children.
Yes.
I wouldn't do that. I couldn't even think of that. You know what I mean? So to say that he loved him, knowing what he did, I don't know, man.
You know what, Mike? Growing up, we hear this saying: when we see a parent about to spank their kid on TV, mm-hmm. it's going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you.
Right.
But when you're a parent, it is very, very true.
It's tough, man.
It is very, very true. I've had a daughter that called me one day and told me, Dad, do you remember one day we went out to dinner and you said out loud, oh man, you guys ruined my dinner? And I said, yes. And then I told my daughter, I'm sorry for saying that. She goes, no, Dad, I have twins now, so I know exactly.
Right.
She goes, and then I whipped them, and then they went to bed, and I started crying because I feel terrible. And I'm like,
yeah,
baby, it's okay.
Right.
It's okay. They need discipline. I said, but now they're asleep. Tomorrow they won't even remember.
Yeah.
It's all good, you know. But yeah, so see, we have these loving feelings. So when somebody does that and I hear that, I'm just going to say, I want to kill that bastard.
Right.
You know, I want to do that. But
I mean, you can see when he got called back to the house, he runs up and shakes the cop's hand. And, oh, yeah, come on in. And
yeah.
And then how do you turn that shit off?
Yeah, he finds the ring. Look, but baby, where are you? And I'm like, okay.
Then he's in the interrogation room, and they're giving it to him because they know. They did an interview with him after he had admitted everything, and he went down. You know, he stopped and he cried a few times. You know, because he says when he goes to sleep at night, every night, he hears his daughter say that, like, "Daddy, are you gonna do the same thing?" So he's got to live with that, you know. But what he did to them is, man, he took out the whole family, dude.
The whole family for another chick.
Yeah. And to think that you can, again, logically, you got to think logically. Like, you think you can kill the family and just, what, go hang out with this other chick in town? You dump the mom where you work in a shallow grave, right? And you put the babies where you work, so you think no one's going to find that. I mean, you know, you're not really thinking, I guess, right? If you think that you can do that, I don't know. You know, and then you can try to break these cases down, but... you're asking, you know, logical. You're like, why would you do this? Why would you do that? They're not thinking, maybe.
You're not thinking. Yeah. You can't say the guy was insane because you saw him on camera.
Right.
You know, I mean, unless he was insane and knows how to control it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know. We've seen a lot of these guys. Just look at, for an example, Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
You know, this guy would pretend he had a broken arm or whatever, hit you over the head, and then go home and be a loving, you know, supposedly a loving husband. And,
right.
You know, so I don't know how these guys do it.
Yeah, BTK killer too. This guy would do some wild stuff with people. He never raped, but he would kill them, and then he would masturbate on the bodies or next to the bodies, you know. Taunt police, you know, I think they caught him 30 years later because he kept fucking with them. You know what I mean? He was sending in like someone's keys and shit from the room, the bedroom that he would only have. And he finally sent a floppy disk in, right, with some info, and they tracked it back to his church where he worked.
Oh, that one, that part I didn't know.
Yeah. Basically, in a nutshell, he committed all these crimes, left semen and things like that. But they weren't able to trace it back then. It wasn't that long. I mean, it was 30-something years ago, I guess, when he first started.
And he was in the church?
He worked at one point. He wasn't a pastor. I think he was an employee. Yeah, he did something there. He was doing something along the lines with the church, right? So he had kept some of these artifacts from some of the victims to prove to cops that that was me. I was there. Here's her driver's license. He was running dialogue with the police through the classified ads. Anyway, so he basically asked them in a classified ad, can I send something to you? You're not going to try to trace it or nothing. And they're like, sure. So he sends a floppy disk. What do? They trace it right back to the church, dude. So he was going home to have lunch with his wife, and they ran him down off the road. You know, he had a wife, a son, a daughter. He was not only was he a Boy Scout like leader at one point. During a Boy Scout trip, he left in the middle of the night, killed the neighbor, went back to the Boy Scouts. He was also an ADT guy, so he'd be in people's homes setting up alarms. And he was also a code enforcement guy, so he'd be going to people's houses, you know. About, I mean, these are people. This cat was even on TV on the news once, man, talking about something with the dog pound, you know, with pound and, right, and, you know, dogs and cats and stuff. So he was a public figure walking into your home and
killing you.
Yeah, killing you, man. You know,
wow. And that's the thing. What, how do you turn that on, turn that off? You know, it's some, like, or does that ever turn off?
Right.
Is that just you 100% of the time? Like, that's the amazing, that's what, I don't want to say amazing, the crazy part.
It's crazy. And then when he's running off, you know, when he, after they sentenced him, he did a whole spiel. And even in the police interrogation, he just tells you what he did, like me and you talking right now. Yeah, I did this to her. Yeah, yeah, we had a cigarette. He had a cigarette with a few of them, you know?
So, okay, see, look, and here's the crazy part. Because guys on the street, you know, boys from the hood.
Right.
I don't talk to cops. You're going to talk to us? I ain't got nothing to say.
Right.
Talk to my lawyer, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
These guys are totally different. Mm-hmm. They'll sit there and, you know, enjoy a donut. And,
they want the attention, you know?
That's what it comes down to.
And they want to be smarter than the police.
Yes.
You know? You see a lot of that. Israel Keys, I don't know if you heard of him. I don't know if you have.
No.
He was another guy that did. I'm reading the book now on it. He's not a famous, popular killer, but he's just sitting in the interrogation room. Yeah, I cut her body up, and then I sunk her at the bottom of this lake in Alaska. Yeah, you guys find her yet? You know? And, you know, you got to be nice to him. As, you know, people complain about that on some of the comments. Like,
right,
the cops are sitting there laughing. They have to. You know, they have to go, oh, okay, yeah. Because that's how you're going to get more information. If you're a dick with them, then you know, you're not going to get that. So, like I said, I think paranormal, horror movies, all that falls into horror.
Yes.
True crime. You know, obviously they make horror movies from true crime stuff. I mean, the Manson case.
Correct.
You know, those two nights, I just did a podcast on that. And, I mean, it was just bloody, blood on walls, blood on the carpet, cuts all over the body. And then they just go home or go wherever they're living.
Like nothing.
Like nothing. So, anyways, we can talk about this
all day long.
Shit all day. It's just going to end up bringing me down, but I don't know. Anything else?
Well, you know what? I think we pretty much covered everything up, you know, as far as like covered everything is that we were going to talk about. I've had a great time, man. You know, I love coming here. It's only my second time. I hope it's not my last.
No.
I love, like I said, I have my own show, Freaky Tales. We talk about this stuff. You know, we try to keep it to a minimum of 2 hours because I know me, I can continue to go on and on and on and on.
Sure.
And I know you love this stuff. We can continue to go on and on and on. But, you know, next time we'll just draw some more different topics and take it from there.
Yeah, and if I ever come back on Freaky Tales, like I said, I don't have any ghost stories, but we can talk some true crime, man. You know what I mean?
Everything you shared here, we got to bring up. I'm like, the JonBenet one, I didn't, you know mm-hmm. about that as far as the details of it. But I'm sure there's other ones that we could talk about.
We can talk. Especially the BTK. You were kind of surprised he worked at a church, you know? So
that one tripped me out. I mean, obviously, he picked the right place to go work at because nobody's going to suspect that. Mm-mm. You know, I mean, there's certain type of churches that a lot of child molesters come out of.
Sure.
You know? Sure. So it's, I don't know. I guess my mind with this one is just like everywhere now because I'm thinking like, wow, a lot of the things that you touched on just blew my mind that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah. Real quick, the Zodiac Killer. You heard of him?
Yes.
Okay. The next episode I'm doing is on Sherry Jo Bates. Her name is Sherry Jo Bates. And she was murdered right up here at RCC. It's a college about 30 minutes up. They're kind of trying to link him to her. I mean, there's points on either side of that.
Right.
So that's unsolved. 1966. They found her right on campus.
Nobody knows
saw
nothing.
A damn thing. You know, so again, we can just keep going on the stuff, but we'll delve into that.
Yeah.
If we can tell us or whatever. So.
Now, let me say this before we head out. When people say nobody saw a damn thing, I guarantee you somebody saw a damn thing, just ain't nobody saying nothing.
Yep. Yep.
Now, look at...
There's that, too, yeah.
I want to touch on something that could get people in trouble.
Okay.
And what I say by this is that on the streets, people say, you know, I'm not a snitch. I'm not going to talk. Okay, cool. There's people out there that don't belong to the streets. But if you can help somebody's family...
Yes. Closure.
Just give them closure. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I saw it was him. Or I saw... Give them something.
Right.
Because let me tell you something. If I was one of those parents, I would have wanted closure. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to live anymore if I knew, you know, I can't find out what happened to my loved one.
Right.
So I know that there are people out there that have seen something. I'll even go as far as saying I know there's people that probably saw the OJ killings and are not saying anything.
Potentially. I mean, I'll listen to the story. Somebody was there with him. I'll listen to that argument.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I think maybe someone in his circle, I mean, his daughter was at the house that night, maybe.
Yeah.
She can say something, but yeah. And closure to, I know closure, it's not going to bring anyone back, but closure in a sense of what you were saying, knowing at least I know what happened.
Yes.
And I can bring her home, especially if she's missing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's cases out there where there's no bodies. You know what I mean? And that stuff's pretty heartbreaking. You know, yes. And I think that's why the intrigue just continues to grow.
Exactly.
With stuff like that. So.
And then it continued to grow. So with that, you know what? Hope I'm back and you'll be back on Freaky Tales. Everybody be looking out. Mike, thank you so much for inviting me. I always have a blast every time I come. Man. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you, brother. And thank you, everyone, for checking us out again. Back to the old format. We're going to get back to some true crime after this, but I wanted to bring Tony back, and I'm glad I did. So thanks for watching. Tony, thanks for coming, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Mercedes McCambridge had a son named John Markle, and John Markle killed himself and his family in their home in Little Rock, Arkansas, back in 1987. It was November 16th, 1987. He had been fired from a brokerage business called Stevens, Inc. Apparently, the trouble arrived in the fall of 1987 as Stevens, Inc. became aware of a report by one of its clients. The document suggested that Markle manipulated a secret account in the name of his mother. The problems at his employer got worse when his mother, Mercedes, sent telegrams telling Stevens officials she hadn't known what Marco was doing with her account. That's probably the truth, because John's response was, "I wish you'd never done a lot of things you did. Night, mother." 3 guns in total were used to carry out the 3 slayings and suicide, police said. 18 firearms were taken in as evidence from the home. Near John Marco was a blood-splattered, full-face, rubber Halloween mask that police believe he wore during the killing. Authorities said it had been rolled up as if it had just been removed. In the second floor bedroom of Markle's 13-year-old daughter, Amy, detectives discovered the bodies of the eldest girl and her sister, 9-year-old Suzanne. Each had been shot in the head and chest. Authorities believe the 2 were in the same room because of severe thunderstorms barreling through the Little Rock area. And the body of Markle's wife, 45-year-old Christine, was found lying across a waterbed in the couple's 3rd floor master suite. She too had been shot in the head and chest. So according to reports, he had been fired on Friday the 13th. Prior to that, the family had reportedly watched and rented Nightmare on Elm Street. On top of that, of course, is the link to the Exorcist movie. And on top of that, he committed these heinous crimes with a Halloween mask on. So what is horror really?